Our big experiment in remote schooling could make education better if we do it right. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. This week on Marketplace, we're talking about what's changed in our lives in this year of pandemic and the lessons we're taking into the future. In education, the transition to remote learning exposed a deep digital and device divide, inequality among schools, and a lack of preparation for online learning. But some of what we learned, no pun intended, could improve schooling in the future and prepare us for the next disruption. That will take money, political will, and stamina. Laura Ruderman is CEO of the nonprofit Technology Alliance, focused on Washington State. Earlier this year, the group released a report called Learning from Calamity.
We actually released this report on Groundhog Day, and we were making jokes that that was quite appropriate because many of our recommendations are not new. They have been made over and over and over again. And the hope is that, like Bill Murray at the end of the movie, we can finally learn our lesson and be able to move forward.
What are the elements of online learning, do you think, that could stick around, that could improve the education system?
Well, I think it's very clear that elements will stick around. We have several school districts that are looking at starting online-only programs because there are students who are thriving in this environment. There are BIPOC students who are happy not to have to deal with the racism that goes on in schools. There are kids with social anxiety. So we've heard that there are school districts in Washington who are looking at having some form of remote learning persist for those who want it. But in order to do that, you know, you need sufficient funding and support and training.
Let's talk about sort of lessons learned. You've also said we have to remember that teaching in person and teaching remotely are fundamentally different things, but that we should instruct teachers in how to do both, right?
Yes.
Tell me more about that.
So I think that, you know, you've seen some schools try and bring back teachers into the classroom and video them, you know, and have them teaching essentially to an empty classroom with all the students watching on Zoom. I think anybody who's ever participated in a meeting in person versus run a meeting remotely understands that it is not a one-to-one translation. Your ability to focus on a live teacher standing in front of you in person, in real life room, we can do that for longer than we can stare at a screen. So there's just all of these different things that go into teaching remotely versus teaching in person that are just qualitatively different.
Well, and you know, we talk a lot about the lack of devices and the lack of internet access for students and families, but that's true for teachers too. They're not necessarily experts or well-equipped themselves.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we stress over and over in this report is that while we talk about internet access for students and devices for students, our teachers need that the same access to high quality internet and high quality devices and the same kind of support for the remote learning. So one of the things that we talk about in this report that some other states that have done this left out is what happens to IT support when you are looking at remote learning versus IT support for, you know, in one building. So there are a lot of different aspects that are going to have to change in order for this to be successful, right? We looked at connectivity, devices, IT support, but we also looked at non-technical things like family engagement coordinators and what you need to do in terms of support for educators and the differences in how they'll teach. It's really a full spectrum of issues that we need to start working on now because they will take time to plan and implement.
What do you think is, I mean, if you could just choose one or two, the kind of most significant places to put energy and resource, is it internet? Is it devices? Is it training?
You know, the problem is that's a little bit like asking a person who's doing a jigsaw puzzle if they mm-hmm. should do the frame or the interior right. or just the upper left. The puzzle isn't going to be complete without all of the different pieces. You can have the best device in the world, and if you can't connect it to the internet, it's a doorstop. You can have your students have great internet and terrific devices, and if you forget about your teachers, you have a problem, right? Mm-hmm. So they really are all interlocking pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. And that's really important because the mess that this pivot was this time can be chalked up to a failure of imagination. But the next time, it will be seen as a failure of leadership if it's this much of a mess again.
Laura Ruderman is CEO of the Nonprofit Technology Alliance. There's a link to that group's report at marketplacetech.org. And now for some related links. We actually have a little related audio for you today, because one thing I've wondered is whether, in addition to there being fewer excuses for snow days, we might start to rethink the idea of school as a physical place. What if there are teachers or classes that are great for a kid but not located in their town? Or a star teacher that everyone wants to learn from, not unlike a college model? Stacia McFadden is the chief information officer at the Lovett School, a private school in Atlanta. Like many schools, it's operating with a hybrid model, where a lot of the students are in person, but some are still taking classes virtually. So their teachers are instructing both kids in the room and kids at home. And McFadden said the school is thinking about how they might benefit from offering those virtual lessons to a wider audience.
I think for independent schools, it's a creative way to look at how to possibly get more income. What if we offer a class that's really good that another kid doesn't have access to, either from another state or something, right? Or even a public school. And they might want to pay for that class, so to speak. So there's ways definitely that we can keep this going. I think it would be smart of us to consider it.
McFadden says if the school did that, then they would have teachers who were totally dedicated to the virtual audience, so they didn't have to split their attention between the two groups. It's sort of a way to scale education. And who knows if it'll be a widespread model anytime soon. But in times of great change, we plant the seeds of even more change, and lots more options are on the table now. And a Christian Science Monitor piece published Tuesday notes that a decent number of parents don't mind remote learning or still think it's safer. An NPR Ipsos poll conducted in February found that 29% of parents said they're likely to choose virtual school for their kids indefinitely. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.